scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Cole Abias, and you are listening to Obese Men in the Theater.
Oh, you had to change it up, didn't you? That's what we do when we're doctors. Doctors of philosophy.
It's fat guys at the movies.
Woo! Big up! Big up! You know, we had Fat Tuesday this week, or I like to call Fatter Tuesday.
Or you like to call Normally Sized Tuesday.
Every Tuesday's Fat Tuesday to me. Let's just be honest.
Yes. Hey, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
How can fans and listeners of this show get a hold of us?
You can get a hold of us at fatguysinthemovies.com. You can check us out on iTunes. You can just search Fat Guys in the Movies. We pop right up. You can go to Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/FGATM for Fat Guys at the Movies, you can like our page and give us all these, you know, bump us up to maybe 240 likes.
Yes.
Which would be awesome. You can email us at fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, 740-205-6456. Chris from Michigan skipped us this week, but we do have two other voicemails to read. We'll be talking, or not read, listen to.
Yeah, we'll, we're going to do it old school style.
We don't read anything on this show. Yeah. We wait for the movie. You know, we're still waiting for the Bible, the movie, mm-hmm. so we can... So
one
that
day.
Annoying, yeah. One of these days, so that book in the hotel rooms doesn't keep just like creeping up on us and saying, "Read me."
Yes.
But Dr. Cole Abias, tell us where you're from and what you do. I mean, I know, but hopefully most of the people know. Well, I mean, you know, you're from Earth.
Well, I'm. I live in Tucson, Arizona, by way of Corpus Christi, Texas, Waco, Texas, Los Angeles, Washington D.C., and Austin, Texas.
Wow. So you love Texas, don't you?
I do, and anxious to get back, but...
Which is why you live in Tucson.
That's right. Hey, well, my wife's in the military. They tell her where to go. We go. And but I, of course, since she actually has a real job, I am the managing editor of Film School Rejects and the host of our Reject Radio podcast.
Yay! Which you actually have. It's much more respectable than this show. This show is just sort of like the redheaded stepchild. Actually, since Film School Rejects first originally was associated with Fat Guys at the Movies, we were the child, and then you came mm-hmm. along with Reject Radio and kind of like brought up the quality by having, you know, real important guests like actual directors and important people, and we just by default became the redheaded stepchild.
Well, and I think actually when you have something that's a little bit when it's a little bit like you said, legitimate. It's actually sort of the redheaded stepchild of the rejects.
That's
philosophy.
Right. It's like, so, what's this legitimacy going on? We want something group talking about breasts and all that good stuff.
Exactly.
So, you don't talk about breasts on your show, do you?
From time to time.
Only, but it's not like one of your platforms, like in a political stance.
Yeah, no, it is not. The bustiness is, I don't know. I mean, we all appreciate it. Everyone does. Everyone on the planet. And if you disagree, you're wrong.
Yeah.
So, we should talk about it more. I'll take show notes from you a little bit later.
Yes, I demand it. I will call in. I should call in and say, what do you think about the breasts this week on TV?
Well, we talked about breasts shooting out milk on the show this week. So.
What were you talking about?
We're talking about Japanese.
Takasa Miyuki? Was that a Miyuki discussion?
Yeah, I made a passing joke about Japanese cinema, and that was the first thing that came to mind.
I've seen Gozu. So
yeah, there you go.
And I have a friend of mine who's actually been on the Fat Guys of the Movie Second Reel podcast promoting the movie marathons, which you've been to. You've been to one mm-hmm. of these.
Yeah, I was at the science fiction marathon,
sci-fi
24
one,
hours in Columbus.
A couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Joe Neff, who runs that, had said, he described Miyuki, says nobody does extreme female lactation and live full-grown human birth the way Takashi Miyuki does. I don't think anybody does it.
Not anymore. No, I mean, the olden days, it used to be everywhere, you know. You couldn't
back
go,
in the pre-code in the 1930s.
You couldn't go anywhere without seeing, like, Humphrey Bogart squirting out breast milk
wow.
into a glass and swirling it around and asking the piano player to keep playing. That's how it was. It was classy time back then.
This is going to be a 10-minute episode when it goes on the actual radio in Wyoming.
Excellent. Hey, we have not said a dirty word yet.
No, we haven't. We were talking about medical jargon.
That's right. And I am a doctor. So there
you are a doctor. That's right.
So
this is the first time we've had a doctor on the show since you came on the show, gosh, almost 2 years ago, actually, to talk about Watchmen. I think that was the last time you were on, Fat Guys.
Maybe. I've carved a carved a line in my arm every time I've been on Fat Guys. So
you have one line.
I have like one scar. I'm carving the next one during the next segment. So stay tuned for that, everyone.
So if we hear you wincing and grunting and everything, you're either passing a kidney stone or...
If I make a noise during it, it doesn't count. I have to start over. It's a test.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or I get kicked out of the village or something. I don't know how it works. I get thrown off a cliff into the rocks.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what it is. It's tough out here in Arizona.
That's what they do. Now, Tucson's at the bottom of the state, right?
It is. We're Phoenix a border. We're technically a border city.
Wow. I've been through Tucson.
Tucson's a nice Did you enjoy it? Our scenic vistas?
Well, you know what's funny is there was this place called Eats a Pizza, which is basically a CC's Pizza before it became a national chain.
Right.
And we went through there with my kids, and they loved it. And then, like, the next year we were driving through, and I called, and...
It did turn into a strip club.
Well, it was a dump. They changed the name, and it was, like, all there, but everything was broken. But in order to get there, I call them, and I said, I'm on the freeway.
Uh-huh.
How do I... What is it, 80?
Well, no, 10, what's 10 goes 10? Through, yeah.
That's what I said. I go, I'm on the freeway. How do I get to your shop? And they go, I don't know the directions. I'm like, okay, well, I'm on 10. So I said the freeway, because there's really only one freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, I'm on 10, and I got off on the business route.
Mm-hmm.
And she couldn't give me directions.
Yeah.
Which blew my mind, because that's it. I mean, how do you, that's like sitting in Manhattan being like, hey, I'm at the Empire State Building. Can you tell me how to get there? I have no idea. What's the Empire State Building again?
Well, you know, we pride ourselves in being able to shun the outsiders. I think they could tell. They're just like, oh, this guy's, he's not from here. Don't let him come.
Well, since I called from, from the freeway. Anyways, we need to talk movies, I guess.
I guess so.
Our first review is Mars Needs Moms. Some uber creepy looking humans must battle adorable Martians to save a boy's mother from annihilation.
Mom?
Let her go!
Wait! Let me go! I'm in a spaceship!
This is so cool!
Welcome to Mars.
My name is Gribble.
This is Two Cats.
What's your handle?
Milo.
How about I call you my bro? Check it.
What is going on?
Fact is, Mars needs moms. So the aliens are stealing them from Earth to raise their own kids.
You didn't get a chance to see this, did you?
I didn't, and I'm the worst off for it.
Did you see the trailers? Have you seen the trailers?
I have, and I was impressed by the animation and a lot of the mocap stuff that they had done, because there's a few frames in it that if you just freeze frame it, it just looks, I mean, it looks exactly like a person. So, a little
Except
creepy.
For the faces. The faces, it's...
Really close, though. Like, Dan Fogler's character, I don't know his name or anything, but there's a couple of stills of him where it's just Gribble. Like, it takes you a second to realize it's animated. So, they did a really good job on that. And otherwise, it looks like a perfectly harmless kids movie.
Well, the thing with Dan Fogler actually looks... He's probably the best emulated, but, like, the kid in it, I just find the kid and the mom who's played by...
Joan Cusack, right?
Joan Cusack. The whole theory of the uncanny valley, if you don't know, if you graph the higher, then you hit this valley. It's just, they've gotten so close, but they're so close. They're at the very bottom of the uncanny valley with this film.
Oh no!
It's just when the Martians are like 100 times more adorable than the actual human beings.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
It is.
Actually, we got to go to break. I'll finish up on the next segment.
All right, we're back, everyone. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. If you didn't know, go tell someone about it. Seriously, go outside right now, scream to your neighborhood that you're mad as hell and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm Cole Obias, sitting in. Kevin Carr.
Dr. Cole Obias and Mr. Kevin Carr.
Is hosting it up, doing it right. And if you're coming back with us, then you know we were in the middle of a review of Mars Needs Moms. Now, Kevin, tell me, what do you like about the movie?
Well, it looks cool. You know what I mean? And it's in IMAX. You can go see it in IMAX 3D. And in 3D, it's cool. I know there's a lot of people out there who hate 3D. I think the best 3D that you get are the movies that are either shot specifically for 3D and composed that way, or a lot of these animated films, because you can do a lot more with the thing. So it looks, with the technology, it looks really good in 3D. It looks really cool in the IMAX. But the thing is, it's released by Disney. So the quality of it isn't, you're so used to Pixar being the Disney standard.
Yeah, Disney is not known for kids' movies.
Yeah, well, in animated films, all the great ones are the Pixar movies, the Disney Pixars, but then, and even like stuff like Chicken Little, which, and Meet the Robinsons, which are perfectly charming and nice. This one's kind of a little bit lower. I mean, in terms of story quality, it's based on a picture book by Burke Breathed. Who was the guy who did Bloom County?
Yeah, Breathed.
It's such a stretch of a story. Excuse me. I took my 7-year-old. He loved it. But that's really who it's for. It's a bit corny. It's a bit silly. It's not a great animated film. It's not like something. I love animated films, and they usually end up, you know, topping my list of best of the year. This is not going to. But
okay,
it's harmless. It's 90. It's 80 some minutes long. So it's
what it feels like. It feels like the trailers made it look like a completely harmless kids movie with kind of a lot of cheese on top. And
there is one horrifying scene that I'm kind of surprised made it in, because it actually is pretty chilling what happens. I'm not going to say what it is. There's a scene where you're watching him like, oh my god, they put that in.
Jack Nicholson's character busts through a door.
Oh, worse. Anyways, I don't want to spoil anything. But anyways, I'm going to say it kind of rocks. It's right there on the border. Kind of rocks, kind of sucks. Maybe something for the kids.
If you're 7 years old, it's awesome.
If you're 7, yes. Let's talk about the next movie, which is Red Riding Hood. The short tale of Red Riding Hood is expanded with werewolves and teen angst love with big hair in a movie that's nothing like Twilight. Seriously, nothing.
We're all in danger.
Come away with me.
It's time to ask for help.
In daytime, the werewolf returns to its human form.
The real killer lives here in this village.
It could be your neighbor.
Your homes will be searched. Your secrets brought to light.
It's here.
It's absolutely nothing like Twilight.
You actually saw this, didn't you?
I did.
I want to hear your take on it. What do you? Because you were the resident Twilight expert for Film School Rejects, and
And for the listeners, don't let that translate as Twilight fan. I'm not. I know more about Twilight than I should, but the movies are terrible, just absolutely abortive. But
you're not wetting your pants at Robert Pattinson's glare and smolder.
I did. You know, I met Robert Pattinson once. I interviewed him, shook his hand, and I was cleaning the grease off of my hand all the next day. So. The thing about Red Riding Hood is this. It is the most confusing... hold on. It's the most... The movie itself is not confusing. The movie itself is just as straightforward as it can get. Yeah. But it is the most confusing movie-going experience that I've probably ever had in my life. Because you go and there are genuine moments of inspiration in this movie. Genuine, like there's 4 or 5 moments where... The writing just gets it right. It takes chances. It defies cliches. And then like almost all the every time that happens, almost immediately some dumb, terrible thing happens, or a line is said that utters exactly what is on screen or exactly what people are thinking. This village is like, for one, it is a some sort of medieval type of village, sort of. Yeah. In somewhere Europe, in I don't know, vague town Europe.
In Forks, Europe.
Yeah, where everyone speaks with an American accent. And everything about it is like, you know, medieval, village, primitive, designed by MTV. Yeah. So it's like everyone's wearing handmade haute couture clothing from, Hot Topic and...
Well, all the, what's like the funny is usually when you see these movies and they're like I saw Season of the Witch a couple months ago, which
I'm sorry,
just alarmingly bad but hilariously bad at the same time. But they aged the clothing. They put people on. They put people in rags.
Yeah, this is not that.
This
case.
One right off the rack. Everybody.
It is. It's right off. It's like you see some like a peasant, you know, who's chopping down trees in what's probably like a $700 shirt.
And he's got creases in it. I mean, it's like laundered and starched.
Well, and I love they have kind of the bad boy character, and that's the deal. Is like Amanda Seyfried is the, you know, Red Riding Hood titular character, and. Mm. Like heartthrob number four. I don't know what his name is, and I haven't looked it up. But
he's got Robert Pattinson hair.
He does. They give him like this grease in his hair, and it's just like, man, I didn't realize you could rock like a faux hawk in that time period. And that's the funny thing. It's like it's almost out of time completely. It's not like anything dates it. So it could have like the end of it. She could have climbed over the wall of the forest and been in modern times or something.
It was like there was just a retelling of the village.
Yeah, what a twist. And. So the thing is this, like, it's an interesting love story. Not really. The love part of it is just annoyingly it shouldn't be there at all.
Well, you know what it felt like? It felt like in that sense, it felt like they were like, well, we've got Catherine Hardwicke, who directed the first Twilight movie, mm-hmm. and we've got something with werewolves instead of vampires, even though there's mm-hmm. wolves in Twilight, but we got werewolves. Mm-hmm. Let's make this as Twilight-y as possible. And so they shoehorned that love story in.
They did. And the movie works best when it is focusing on the mystery of who the werewolf is.
Which I guessed from the beginning.
Well, and that's the great thing about it to me is, like, no. The mystery is a little bit intriguing if you mm-hmm. totally leave out the fact that someone in the village is the werewolf. But we're not going to get everyone in the village together in the same place at the same time.
And just say, whoever turns into a werewolf
yeah, exactly.
is the werewolf.
It's never, like, deductive reasoning did not make it to this village yet. And so, the other part of it is that even though, like, I have to say, the reveal of it, there's no secret. Like, it's pretty guessable. But at least the reveal of it and the intentions of that character are done really well, I
yeah.
think. They
okay.
make a lot of sense, and they're important, especially when you have something as serious as murder going on.
Sure.
But other than that, man, the movie is just ups and downs of, you know, one of my favorite parts, and it's really illustrative, they're in a cave, this group of men is going into a cave to hunt down a wolf, and they come to a fork in the cave, and it's like there for a second, and you're watching this really beautiful shot of these, you know, fire lit, you know, torches and the glow off the cave walls, and then a guy's like, it's a fork. And you just think, I got it, man. I'm there with you. I gathered that. I did not need a character to say it. And that's really indicative of just, it feels like someone was really nervous. Mm. You know? They were nervous that they did not dumb it down enough.
This is the thing that struck me about this movie is, mm-hmm. and I actually said this to my wife, who's a huge Twilight fan, and I keep bringing mm-hmm. Twilight up because I think it's because I don't think Catherine Hardwicke is a good director at all. I've never seen a movie of hers that I've liked. I've not seen 13.
I thought 13 is a good movie. I thought it was a good stamp for
hated,
her, so.
Hated The Lords of Dogtown. But I did not see 13. And I thought the first Twilight movie was terrible.
It is.
And so I came home and I said to my wife, I'm like, well, it's better than Twilight. But I think it's better than Twilight because Twilight, you had Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson chewing the scenery through the entire movie, just not mm-hmm. acting at all,
yeah.
doing the worst job ever. And in this one, at least you have Amanda Seyfried and Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman, yeah.
You know, and
even you have, you know, Lucas Haas is in it as well. Like, you have...
He shows up, Virginia Madsen. But see, the rest of the film, though, the rest of the film is populated by TV actors. You're
yeah.
like, oh, that's the woman from Dead Like Me. Oh, that's the Cylon from Battlestar Galactica.
See,
I don't watch
much television at all, so I don't have that, but...
Yeah, everybody. I mean, it was like the movie Skyline. If you saw Skyline, you're just like, oh, here's the guy from Dexter, and that's the guy from 24, and that's the guy from Scrubs.
Yeah.
You know, it was... And it really illustrates, it's a nice illustration of there are TV stars and there are movie stars, and sometimes
yeah.
they can make the cross, you know, like somebody like John Lithgow can do both, but not everybody can, you know. Sherman Hensley was never going to be a movie star.
That's correct.
He's not in this movie, although that would have
been
awesome.
Would have been so awesome. Better. But,
anyways.
You know, to be safe, like some of the writing is really interesting, then like 70% of it is... I mean, these characters are saying exactly what's on their mind. There's
yeah.
there's no hidden anything in this, and it's not complex, but...
Real quick, fat guy grade.
Fat guy grade, it is not rocking, but barely so.
It sucks for me. We're going to lead you out on the Battle Los Angeles trailer.
A small cluster of meteors is predicted to enter our atmosphere.
Scientists are scrambling to try and understand it.
Evacuations are now underway.
About 2 or 3 meteors just impacted.
Oh my God. It appears that there's something like shadowy figures.
I think I'm going to head back now. Everyone needs to get out of here right now. Lucas, if you could just come back, please. Oh my God.
When you invade a place for its resources, you wipe out the indigenous population. Right now, we are being colonized.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies. If you're still listening, you heard the Battle of Los Angeles trailer right before the end of the segment. I said Red Riding Hood sucked. Did you give it a kind of suck?
I don't know. It's like I don't know, 10 degrees above suck. It's not like...
It's slightly better than a suck.
I'll tell you what. I will give it this grade, and it's completely bifurcated, but like 30% of the movie, it rocks. And then 70% is just bottom of the barrel suck. So take the average of that. And it's so weird. Like, I don't want to talk about it anymore. I was really confused. It was like, okay. Who... Like, it feels like... Whatever happened with the script was like someone had a decent script, and then a producer was just like, oh, it's not gonna, nope, no, this is, it's too, you know, too complex. It's complex.
Telling what's going on.
They're at a fork in the cave, and it's on screen, but I don't know if people are gonna understand that they have to split up.
Like, let's put a 10-minute rave in the middle of the movie.
We gotta do it. Hey, I love that rave segment.
You know what's funny is that in that rave, I left to go get popcorn because I had a coupon for a free small popcorn, and you know, so I was like,
and that's the way you're gonna get popcorn.
Well, and I'm like, I gotta get out of this theater. Yeah. And I went and I got popcorn. When I came back, they're still at the rave, and I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Hey, you missed a lot of important character development, but okay.
I don't think I did, because I pretty much understood every single moment of the rest of the movie.
Yeah, that's a good indicator. I left for 10 minutes and I came back and I was still right on track. Yeah, so.
Knew exactly what's going on. Anyways, let's talk about Battle Los Angeles. Like I said, you heard the trailer on the way going out. You did not get a chance to see it. Are you going to see it this weekend, though?
I am. It's going to be tomorrow. So we're just recording too early.
Recording a little early. Yeah.
But I will tell you this. I am excited about it because I like the trailers a lot and I like the actors involved and I like explosions.
Yeah,
well,
you're gonna get that. You're gonna get that.
Yes.
What's funny is as we're recording this, the embargo has just clicked off, and so all the reviews have kind of hit the internet at the time of recording this, and it's getting decimated by critics.
Really?
And I think like Roger Ebert gave it a really scathing review and people like that. I have to say I enjoyed the movie. It wasn't. Let's put it this way: the trailers make it look better than it is.
Okay.
But it's not terrible. I mean, it's still a good movie.
Roger Ebert doesn't understand action or comedy. Those are the two things that Ebert, as much as I worship the man as a critic, if you read his comedy reviews, the guy is tone deaf. He has 10 years of comedy.
Which is why he didn't like Kick-Ass at all.
Well, that and he has a 10 year for action too. So
yeah. Well, here's the thing. I described it, and I think this is actually really accurate. I described it as a cross between Green Zone and Skyline. It's a better movie than both.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, because neither one were any good. But it's like Green Zone in the sense that it really felt like it was shot
boots
like Green Zone. Yeah, totally. Because the whole thing, the thing is, of course, as you know, it's aliens evading LA kind of thing. But it's all told from the point of view of this Marine battalion troop, whatever it is, the group. I don't know what
Aaron Eckhart's character.
Yeah, he's leading this troop into the war zone to kind of get civilians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all told from his point of view. So it's not like Independence Day where it's taking place with the president or and all that. It's all on, like I said, boots on the ground, which is where it's like Green Zone, and it's shot like Green Zone to the point of annoyance. Like the first reel is the most annoying shaky cam footage you will come across, because there's like a scene. There are literally two guys sitting across a desk from each other, and it's shaking, like doing the push in and push out and moving. And I'm like, what, did they get somebody with Parkinson's to shoot this thing? It's nothing against people with Parkinson's.
Wow. But Michael J. Fox was actually the DP, and that's...
I feel totally awkward.
As well you should.
But no, it was such... You get acclimated to it, and once you get to the battle footage, that is appropriate.
Okay.
It's just like, I remember when I saw Green Zone, you're like, okay, their boots on the ground, they're in war zone. But when he goes back to the and they have a press conference, mm-hmm. you don't need that kind of cinematography.
Yeah, you need to switch it up a little bit and get the Steadicam rig for those moments. But let me ask you a question. Aaron mm-hmm. Eckhart, I have no doubt. Aaron Eckhart is just one of those guys who walks the line between being himself and being an acting a role, which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
But I have questions about the other people, especially like Michelle Rodriguez, because she was in an indie that I saw recently, and she acts in
Avatar?
It.
Is that what you're saying?
No. But she acts in it. And
okay.
It blew my mind because she proved to me that she can act. And so that's my question, is like, it doesn't seem like anyone will let her do that.
No. In this one, it's Avatar, it's Resident Evil, it's
so she's got
everything else you've seen,
and
Lost.
She kicks ass.
Yeah, I mean, she's tiny compared to all the other guys because she's like, 4'2".
Yeah.
She's an elf. but I mean, and here's the thing, the big, I can't not compare it to Skyline.
Okay.
Because it's the same story. And instead of in Skyline, it's like a rapper and his posse.
Right.
Running away from aliens. In this one, it's Marines.
So other basically than that, the same thing.
The exact same thing.
Do the Marines rap at any point?
No, but you know what's funny is there are two of them that do have a rap. One of them looks like Freddie Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's the other one. There's another weird, like, there's a guy who looks like Freddie Mercury and a guy that looks like Don Glover, and they're like buddies. And then there's like, of course, the black guy is a rapper.
Wow, because the movie is racist.
I guess so. But I mean, it's if you want to see that action-y mm-hmm. kind of blow shit up kind of movie, it does it. The stars are movie stars, whereas like I said, the stars of Skyline were all TV stars,
right?
And that brought it down a notch. The writing's better, but it's very simplistic. So
you bring up a really interesting point. I think it's something that not a lot of people think about, but it's not, you know, the comment that you're making, I agree with completely. It's not meant to belittle television acting. It's just that the skills needed to be on TV and the skills needed to be in a movie very different, and
they're different skills. It doesn't mean one's better than the other.
And the truth of the matter is, there are a few actors that can cross over and display both sets of skills. But there are a lot of times when you see people that primarily do television and do it well, mm-hmm. hop into movies and do it poorly. And
classic
you're right.
example is Alan Alda.
Yeah, Alan Alda. I guess that's
ruled
true.
MASH. He ruled MASH, and he was fantastic in it.
Mm-hmm.
You put him in a movie, and you're just like, he just doesn't work. I mean, like as a bit part, like as a lawyer, he was like a lawyer in Flash of Genius and stuff like that. But what a movie surrounding him. Like I remember, I saw the Mephisto's Waltz, and he plays the bad guy, and it's just silly.
Yeah,
because it's Alan Alda as like the Satan worshiper.
You also can't put him as a bad guy ever. So because he's your grandpa, like he's gonna, I'm gonna cut your heart out and give you a Werther's original. That's Alan Alda. So
it's totally Alan Alda, and he'll have a petition for you to sign or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. There's the neighborhood is trying to do something right now, and I just really want to talk about water conservation. So let's work together. And she's like, "What is this guy doing? Put him on West Wing. He knocks it right out of the park."
Exactly. There we go. But anyways, I'm going to say Battle Los Angeles kind of rocks. I'm going to break with my posse out there on the internet and say I actually kind of liked it. If it was in the summer, it wouldn't be that good, but it's good for a spring movie.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I haven't seen it.
Wow, that's bold.
Thank you.
There you go. Let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about box office from last weekend.
Okay.
Rango came out on top. It made its $38 million for the weekend. Did you
make your $38 million for the weekend?
Winning. No, I did not. I didn't make $38 last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I like my biggest accomplishment was driving to the Krispy Kreme to get donuts for the family.
Hey, that's like $38.
Well, sort of, almost. Mm-hmm. Anyways, but yeah, it did well. People are saying it underperformed, but like it underperformed like 2 million. I mean, some people were saying 50 to 60, but
that's because a lot of people think they understand what's happening with the box office. But to this day, I have not met a single person who understands the box office in any real way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
It's like political scientists. You gotta stay firm in what you're saying, but the truth is, it's a soft science. You don't know the reason.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, it's one of those things that it's. I mean, I heard some people took kids to see. My wife was looking on Facebook or something, and she said one of her friends took their kids, and they were complaining about like a lot of the kids were bored. But I'm like, well, this was a Saturday afternoon, so it was probably filled with 5-year-olds, and 5-year-olds aren't going to get Rango,
right?
You know. I mean, they'll get like the first 30 minutes of it, but then when the story kicks in, they got to wait till the giant bat flight fight scene to actually get excited
again. Well, unless they drop acid before. So if you're going to go see Rango with your 5-year-old,
yes,
do some LSD pre.
With them. Give them the LSD.
Absolutely.
Or a stiff drink, and then they can nap during the movie or something.
There you go.
The Adjustment Bureau.
Send your complaints to Kevin Carr at...
Yes. Care of Fat
Film School Rejects, fatguys@themovies.com. Do it.
The Adjustment Bureau did pretty well for what it was, $21 million. I thought it was a surprisingly good movie. Did you see that one?
I didn't. I don't get to see a lot of movies. They don't screen them in Tucson all that much, and sad. The funny thing is there is that pocket of movies where I pay to see pretty much everything that I review, and there's that pocket that just never makes it to Tucson at all, ever. So yeah. Sad to say.
Beastly, you dodged that bullet.
I had a chance. That definitely came here, and I was supposed to review it for the site. I claimed it and everything, and then I was like, no, we don't need it. We're good.
No,
I made an executive decision.
It showed up in the report card. I'm pretty sure that somebody wrote something about it.
Count it. So,
And then Take Me Home Tonight couldn't even break the top 10.
Yeah.
Which it'll do better on video. That's the kind of movie it is. And The King's Speech, the PG-13 edit, made $6.2 million. This had nothing to do with the Oscar win, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
That's
the question to me is, like, I still don't get that decision. I've had no one explain it to me correctly. Like, everyone was really fuming that they would edit it at all, which, that sucks, I guess. But at the end of the day, I still don't understand the business decision of editing a movie for language down to PG-13. Because there's, like, a ton of 14-year-olds that are like, Mom, I've got to see this King's Speech thing.
Pretty much any kid who's dying to see the King's Speech, or any parent who wants their kid to see the King's Speech, will take them to see the R-rated.
Every, like, 18 of the teenagers that wanted to see that movie saw it.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I can explain it in 3 words.
Okay.
It's the Weinsteins.
There you go. Yeah. You know, do you get the idea that they did it just because they could?
I honestly think that the Weinsteins are like Charlie Sheen at times, only they don't go out and talk about it in public.
Yeah.
I think that they are sometimes making the most bizarre decisions.
I don't know. Bob Weinstein came out last week and was trying to convince people that Apollo 18 was found footage. And he straight up said, no changing of context. He said, we found this footage. Found baby. He ended his quote with found baby, which
found
I thought was hilarious.
Baby?
Found
was,
baby.
Was he speaking from the Sober Valley Lodge?
I guess so. It's so weird. Like, you know, bizarre. Guess what? This thing that didn't happen historically, we found footage about it. And he was like, WikiLeaks, people know they're being lied to. And here's another example. Movie makers, happened to find this footage that would be damning to the government. And we're going to release it in theaters.
We're going to release it in theaters, and we're going to edit it to PG-13.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
Check it out.
And then Colin Firth is going to say the F-bomb in it one time.
That's right. He'll be like, hey, fuck.
Yeah.
Cock. Yeah. We can swear in this segment, by the way.
Oh, we can? Because this is off the radio.
Which is why I just did. Yeah.
Sorry. So let me redo that. Colin Firth is going to say fuck.
Yeah, now you can talk about lactation and squirting from the nipples.
Oh, I do. On the PG-13 version of this show anyway. So
that's right.
We're good.
All right. Anyways, what do you think is going to win this weekend? Do you think Battle of Los Angeles is going to take it?
Dude, I am going to say this. I don't know anything about the box office. Like,
neither does anyone else. Just making
but
wild guesses.
I don't pretend to. So the difference is this. Like, if someone's like, you know, I really think that that Battle of Los Angeles is going to rock right in the $32 million range, you got to say, based on what? And then they're like, well, you know, you know. No, I don't. Yeah. Based on what? It's, I don't know, stuff. They did a study. I think, I will tell you this. This is my prediction right now. I think that Mars Needs Moms is going to open to $215 million this weekend.
That's bold.
Put your chips in the middle of the table on that one, okay?
That's my I'm all in.
That's my guess. And I did a cross-sectional five-year study on it to prove those numbers. So.
Are we using Price is Right rules that if you go over, you lose?
Yeah. Sorry, I should have done that the opposite extreme, right? Battle Los Angeles is going to make $18.
Well, no, it's always at the end of the, they're like, $1. I bet $1 because everyone bet over $800.
They're jerks. I'm gonna bet $1 bettors cannot stand them. They're bad people.
I'm going to bet that Margarine Moms makes $251 million and one.
And one.
And one.
Sold.
No, but anyways.
What do you think?
I don't know. I think Battle Los Angeles is going to win of the three movies. Yeah. I definitely think. I don't think that there's. The thing with like Red Riding Hood, they're obviously going for the Twilight market, mm-hmm. but I think the diehard target marketed Twilight kids are gonna like it. Mm-hmm. The ones in the screening that I went to, they friggin' love it.
Yeah.
So 14, 15-year-old tweens and teens, girls.
Did you wear your team Edward shirt?
I wore my team Cletus shirt.
I love Cletus. Do you know, spoiler alert, but she actually ends up with Cletus at the end of Breaking Dawn.
He just comes in, he's like, hey, what's up?
Yeah, that's it. That's all it takes with Cletus.
She's like, oh, swoon, and she sort of stammers a little bit.
I think. She doesn't. Hey, I want to throw this out there. I know we're done talking about Red Riding Hood, but that thing was so confusing.
We'll be talking about this for three weeks.
Here's the difference, all right?
The next time you're on the show in two more years, Seriously. We're going to talk about it.
The difference, real quick, is like, okay, Twilight is an empty movie. Like, Twilight is completely devoid. Like, there's no action. There's nothing happening. It's just stares at each other and no talking and stuff like that. It's wistfulness. Uh-huh. And this actually has stuff in it. Like, things happen. So... And anyway, it's so confusing. It's an earworm, man. It's like gotten in my mind. It's like
here's something very simple, but we're gonna twist it up and rot it up into a paper ball.
How did something with so much potential that has actually shined through in the end result be so bad? I don't get it. Who made those decisions? Like, did it? I feel like they had a final cut in the can, and then some like squirrel got in the room and was like on the Avid Pro machine and was like chewing away at stuff. Stuff and just destroyed.
Smoking a cigarette, drinking coffee, going, I need to change this.
Exactly.
This doesn't make sense to us squirrels. It doesn't make sense.
So the squirrel market will never love this.
The squirrels will love it, but yeah, I think teenage girls will go see it, but I really don't. It's not going to get the Twi Moms.
And squirrels.
Or squirrels, because squirrels, I still don't think it made it for the squirrels.
That's true. They did.
That squirrel was just
okay. That's it. That's the last thing that I'll say. No more. I promise about the movie.
Marcy's Moms will do okay, but I mean, it's such a kids' movie. It doesn't have that crossover potential. So right, I mean, even like Rango appealed to adults, so that's what got it into the 30 million range. Mm-hmm. But I really think Mars Needs Moms. That's you're looking at a mid, 20s. I think Battle Los Angeles. I'm going to say 32 million since you threw that out.
There you go.
32 million. So. Next, let's talk listener voicemails. We've got two of them this week. The first one is from our good friend Thomas from Seattle. And he has a little question about Guillermo del Toro, Universal, and the Mountains of Madness.
Hi, Kevin. This is Thomas from Seattle. I was just reading Harry Knowles' column yesterday about the cancellation of Guillermo del Toro's H.P. Lovecraft horror movie. Is supposed to be working on with Tom Cruise and James Cameron, and he really got on Universal Studios, the studios that was going to make the movie, but then canceled it and said they were just happy to make mediocre films and that, they didn't like to make, push the envelope and make great films. And I just wonder, I've heard that argument so many times over the years, and it's just like, why would a studio want like a mediocre film? Like, why would they start off with the intention of it being mediocre? Why wouldn't you want your movie to be an Inception level, where it's critically approved and a box office bonanza or something like Avatar, which, had a lot of critical praise and was, the biggest, highest grossing movie of all time. So I think Harry kind of misses a point that, a studio doesn't want to make a mediocre film. They just, the execution, something happens and there's something lacking there, and a movie that turned out like that was maybe promising was just turned out to like everybody had an off day. Also, I guess he gets on the studio for not wanting to spend $150 million to make this movie, and it's just like, well, if it's not going to make its money back, which you can kind of guarantee that it won't, being a horror film that expensive, and the market's just not there, then why is the studio at fault for that? They know how much a movie is probably going to make, and they don't want to lose money. I mean, it's not Harry Knowles' money. If it was his money, he'd probably be speaking a different tune. So why do we get on the studio for every now and then deciding to be careful with their money? Because it is their money. They can do with it what they want. Anyway, I guess, have I kind of been rambling here? Anyway, Thomas from Seattle, and I guess I threw a few different points in there. And hopefully Neil's doing okay as well. Talk to y'all soon. Bye.
You wrote up about this stuff. I read a little bit of what was on Film School Rejects because I don't read. But I actually made a point to... And also, I'm a huge Lovecraft fan. So I read a little bit of this. You actually did the research and wrote this stuff, so I want to ask you what exactly happened.
I did read some things and then wrote about them.
Yeah, what happened with the Mountains of Madness? Is it just too expensive?
Well, that's the theory, and take what I have to say with a grain of salt. We will never know what happened inside the room, of course, but we know the stories that are coming out of it, and Universal is being very silent, and I think a very smart move for them, a very shrewd move to be quiet about this, because the more they ignore it, the faster it goes away. But effectively, Guillermo del Toro left The Hobbit, and it was a very tough decision for him, I'm sure, because he wrote those scripts. He lived with them for a really long time, and I know that he wanted to direct really badly, and he had to leave, and it was a matter of timing. They couldn't get Hobbit off the ground. It wasn't happening, and so he wanted to move on to his passion project, which, I mean, another passion project, effectively, which was At the Mountains of Madness, to do this large-scale Lovecraftian semi-sci-fi movie that, you know, most people think of it as being a big monster movie, but the truth is it's a very quiet sort of book, and with a lot of great monster elements in it. Would have been fantastic. Way too much money to spend on it, though. And that's where I agree with Universal. They made a smart business decision. They did not make a good creative decision. But as far as not... I mean, saying yes costs money, which is something I brought up in the article I wrote for the site. The Culture Warrior entry this week was not done by our very own Landon Palmer, who normally rocks it, but in a much more intelligent way than I, but... this week I wrote about why studios needed to fail. And I truly believe that this Mountains of Madness situation has, once again, shined a spotlight on a real disease that's pervading. And people got really frustrated at Universal. But the truth is that I think people are really frustrated because Universal was one of the last bastions of hope. They took a lot of chances as a studio. They put out movies that were not formula. And,
but they've taken it in the shorts over the last 2 years
and
because of it.
That's totally true. They've taken it in the shorts, and when they've done formula, they've done it wrong, effectively.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, yeah, like Wolfman.
Yeah, and all intents and purposes, you know, they did, you know, Scott Pilgrim was based on a comic book, and it's popular, and it's got these cool comedy actors in it, and it tanked, you know? I mean, it didn't... Tanked is the wrong word, but it certainly did not perform in the way that it should have. And
well, but I look at Scott Pilgrim as the exact same... I think they, and I wouldn't be surprised if they looked at Scott Pilgrim with Mountains of Madness. The internet wants it. The fanboys want it. There'd be a lot of passion behind it. But honestly, I think they made the right, we shouldn't be bemoaning them if to say, you need to spend $150 million because I really want to see this movie.
Well, I think we should because, like I said, they make the right business decision. But at the same time, it does point to them sort of giving up in a way, in my mind. You know, they've taken chances. Their output is way down. You know, if you look at 2 years ago, they were putting out 21 movies or 25 movies. The last year was 16. This year it's going to be around 16. So they're having to put out fewer movies, and it's almost like them waving the white flag. We have lost money on the chances we've taken. Now we're going to do the smart formula business thing, which... Even I don't think that Universal is capable of doing, to be honest, because the other side of this story is that they passed. So let's say, for example, they passed because the price tag was $150 million, and that's a lot. And their math is nearly correct. They would have needed to recoup about $500 million to really put a dent and make that a success. So that's tough. I mean, that's
well, big, a lot of times money. When you spend that much money on a movie, that's your anchor, and that's where you hide all the budgets for everything. Like right. The Harry Potter movies at Warner Brothers, mm-hmm. you know, they may spend $200 million on it, and they make $1 billion worldwide, but then they're like, right. oh, yeah, we didn't make any money because that covers all the costs from everything else.
Right.
New Line Cinema, same thing with the three Lord of the Rings movies are pretty much what bankrolled the rest of the next 2 years of the company.
And Avatar at Fox, which really dug them out of a hole too. You look at Fox's track record and they were not doing well, you know, 2 years up to Avatar. And, you know, the situation, unfortunately, with Universal is it's just sad that the disease has gone to Universal, the disease of the formula. And, you know, like you say, Scott Pilgrim is an internet thing where a lot of people really wanted it to happen. But at the end of the day, the formula is not complex. You know, if it's a comic book, if it's a sequel, a prequel, a reboot, or a remake, you know, it's done. It's done deal. That is formula. That is how we make money. And the interesting thing is that today, you know, Universal, there's a rumor going around that Universal is thinking about prepping a reboot of Doom. And this, to me, if true, I don't know if it's true or not, and if true, though, if they really are prepping it, it means someone thinks it's a good idea at that studio, and that is frightening to me, because not only is it completely out of touch, it's one of those other things where you think, okay, one, Universal is trying to play formula now instead of spending money on At the Mountains of Madness with a brilliant director. They're going to shove a bigger budget toward a reboot of a video game that was popular in the 90s, tanked as a movie 5 years ago. And I don't, where is the business information? Like, where is the, yes, we should totally do this? And
no,
it's not there.
Let me give you an example. I remember having a discussion with somebody about Unstoppable versus Skyline.
Okay.
And again, I'm going to bring up Skyline.
You should.
But the reason I bring up Skyline, and I don't have any love for this movie, but I think it's a unique situation. Mm-hmm. You get Skyline, you got Unstoppable, came out the same week. And Unstoppable made way more money than Skyline did. But but at the end of the day, Skyline was a vastly profitable movie because it cost $10 to $20 million to make. Spent okay on marketing. It made $62 million worldwide. It hasn't even come to video. Unstoppable cost over $100 million to make, mm-hmm. or $80 to $100 million to make.
Right.
And it basically made $80 to $100 million.
Right.
You know, and so which one's a better business decision? You know, and not to say we need to start making Skylines, but if Guillermo del Toro would come in and say, I can deliver Mountains of Madness for $50 million, they would be stupid to say no to that.
Well, and unfortunately,
$150 million. But $150 million, that's a movie that I am all for people making a movie I love, like Watchmen. I loved Watchmen. Mm-hmm. It was not The Incredibles. It should never be associated with that. It was not a family-friendly, action-filled movie. I'm glad they made it. It probably wasn't the smartest business move to spend as much money as they did on it.
Well, it would have been a fairly decent business move had it not been for lawsuits and really mismanagement on that end. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't care. I am not a cheerleader for the studios. I could care less. I can note that they make good business decisions, but that's not why, like, good business decisions aren't what make me passionate about movies. So when they pass on At the Mountains of Madness for $150, you know, I look at them and pat them on the head for making a good business decision and then curse them for being stupid creatively. And the truth is this, and I believe this wholeheartedly, that like all things, like all fads, like all trends and all formulas, the remake, reboot, sequel, prequel, comic book pandering that is going on right now is going to fail, and it is going to fail hard. And the studios right now are too inflexible to know it. They will lose a lot of money trying to learn that the formula is on the way out.
I tweeted something out this week because I was watching because they're coming up with the Arthur movie, the remake of Arthur. I went back and I watched the original Arthur. Then I watched Arthur 2, which is awful.
Yeah.
but it was made in 1988. I happened to click on a Wikipedia link of the movies that came out in 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And I tweeted out that link and I said, look, if you think that reboots, remakes, sequels is that the rush to do that for big Hollywood releases is anything new, you need to look at this page. Because it is 88. Sure, they had some cool movies that came out in 88. Mm-hmm. But there were a ton of sequels. And there's stuff in there like Short Circuit 2, which you're like, oh, I forgot about that one. You know, these kind of movies that they were making sequels to. Arthur 2. And they were rebooting, I don't have it off the top of my head. I don't have them. But this is the year 1988 was just filled with this stuff. And same thing, last year was filled with that stuff. But you still had some pretty cool stuff like Inception. And then, of course, the award movies like Black Swan. And then you had great remakes like True Grit.
I will tell you this, though. It's not the case that I believe that this is a new thing. Sequels were so bad back in the day.
Bowery Boys, Blondie movies, Laurel and Hardy films, yeah.
They've been bad for a long time, but, you know, the case is this. Yes, you can point to Inception, you can also look at the summer around it and say it was awful. It was a terrible summer last year.
It was not a good summer.
It was not. And you can point to...
2010 wasn't a great year for movies at all.
Exactly. You can point to the prestige films. The point is, we are being overrun, and... It is a situation where, yes, sequels are nothing new, and in fact, sequels have improved, I believe. You know, this none of this is demonstrable. It's all how I feel about stuff. But when you look at 1988, the difference in films is stuff like Rain Man. Rain Man was the top-grossing movie of 1988. I want you to wrap your mind around the possibility of something like Rain Man making the most money in a year today. Not going to happen. And... it's really the middle budget movies that have died completely because of the business model. To say that we have to make $1 billion on one movie so that we can finance everything else. The movie industry has gone to the music industry's former model, which has failed. And now that's what's happening. We're not getting $40 million budget movies.
Look at the box office. You got the Adjustment Bureau. This week, I'm looking at the box office. Adjustment Bureau, Beastly, Hall Pass, Unknown, even something like Big Mama's Drive Angry, which wasn't super expensive to make. These are movies that are middling priced, you know, 30 to 50 million or sometimes 20 million or less. So you still see those things showing up. It's just everyone, so much attention gets put on the big, huge budget movies. I think people forget about them. I saw 5 movies last week in 6 days, and they weren't all $135 million movies like Rango. They were stuff like Take Me Home Tonight.
But a lot of the movies that you mentioned are also not necessarily produced by studios. So they never have been. Well, I mean, really what I'm relegating my comment to is not quote-unquote Hollywood, which is just some sort of boogeyman that doesn't exist. What I'm specifically talking about is the Big Five, you know. You look at any of the studios that are actually putting out, like, let's call it 15 to 25 movies a year. These are the ones that everyone knows by name. Mm. You know, that business model has sort of deteriorated the mid-level budget movie. And it's the case where, you know,
If you're talking strictly funded, and
absolutely
produced by the studio, not by something like Relativity.
Right.
Which brings in something, you know, like,
Even not
Season
like,
of the Witch.
Not like a New Line, not like a Relativity, you know.
Or even like Romeo and Juliet, which was produced by Elton John and picked up by Disney.
Exactly. Like, there's these weird situations. And the funny thing is, a lot of the movies that we're seeing now, like, still, the big studios are the main, like, they're the most prolific. But we also see, like, 300 movies a year now, you know? Yeah. So while they are the most prolific, the actual single biggest studio is not the big studio. You know, everyone else is making like hundreds of movies a year, and the Big Five are like nailing down their like 100 to 130.
Well, and what they do is you get these smaller, like Dark Castle, which did Unknown.
Right.
And then Warner Bros. I don't know what the deal was on that and who when they picked it up and when they became involved. Mm-hmm. But a lot of these things originate somewhere else. But I think that's okay, because at least there's a place for them. Well, the studios, let them be business mode and then acquire stuff.
It's nice. It is nice that there is a place for that stuff. And the reason that they're doing the business that way is because they went in and saw that indie films were getting really big in the 90s. And so they went in and created faux indie arms. And now those have all collapsed because they shoved way too much money into them. So now they're able to go pick up other movies just in the same way. So like I said, it's completely conjecture on my part, but the way that I view the industry trend currently is that we are absolutely awash in the formula movies, and they are getting worse creatively, because you're not going to be able to hire a visionary director to make your movie that's based on an old property. You just aren't. Like, that's going to stop happening. And then even when you get someone like Peter Berg for Battleship, who is a very talented director.
No, he's not.
I think he's made some good stuff. And
he has.
And
but go on, I'll let you believe that. Go on.
You know, I do. I think Peter Berg is certainly a capable director. And
he is like, I wish I was Michael Bay. Peter, I wish I was Michael Bay Berg.
Yeah, but okay. And he's made, look, The Kingdom's a great movie, and at the end of the day, the pilot for Friday Night Lights is probably one of the best pilots I've ever seen. So the thing is this, Hancock was not a great movie, but then you actually agree with the point I'm making, is you're not going to get, you know, Guillermo del Toro wants to go do At the Mountains of Madness. Guillermo del Toro does not want to do Battleship. He doesn't, you know, 1980s Ridley Scott doesn't want to do Monopoly, but I don't know why that's happening.
And well, that's just, I don't know.
You know, and it's
that I don't get. I think they're just grasping at property.
But that's the situation. You're not going to get Leonardo DiCaprio doesn't want to be in Battleship either. The top talent, the people who are good at acting and directing, and all
people like
that.
Emily Blunt, they picked movies like Gulliver's Travels.
She was contractually obligated for that. That was a rough situation. So, I mean, you talk about the inner workings. She was all set to get some better parts, and they contractually nailed her down to that awful, terrible pile of a movie. So, but
did very well overseas.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Just on the last episode of Reject Radio, I did a segment with two writers from Cracked, Charlotte Coville and Ash Cantrell, and very knowledgeable. They co-wrote a piece that was effectively a list of secrets, or like Hollywood major studio production tricks and secrets that ensure that a movie is going to suck. And part of that is that a lot of the movies that are bigger movies cannot rely on an American audience. They have to rely on worldwide ticket sales. So you take a movie.
That's true. If you think that there's crappy movies being made in these big budget movies, you don't blame the Americans. Blame the people overseas who are going to see them. I mean, if you don't want more movies like 2012, then you need to get rid of the rest of the world.
And that's the example. You know, 2012 didn't do great money over here. It did okay. And
800 million overseas.
You know, it's the case that, one, the international language is action and explosions. It just always will be. But when you don't, and which is fine, I love explosions as much as the next person, but there has to be something in between stuff blowing up. There has to be people talking and things interacting. And the problem is, when you are trying to market to, you know, 20 different major cultural groups that have different language, different customs, and different thoughts and philosophies about life and existence, you gotta reduce it down. You gotta boil it all down into stupid, basically.
I'm pretty sure that you could take somebody from Japan who doesn't speak a lick of English, put them into the 2012 audience and not subtitle it, and they'll get the movie.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it. You know, you have to be able to do that. And just like we are blind to foreign actors, you know, we can't tell whether an actor speaking Japanese or German is acting well, because we don't, because we say the lines in our head and we are the best actor possible in our mind. It's the same thing. You know, you get Ben Affleck overseas and he's like, you know, he is God to them acting wise. He is, you know, he's an incredible, formidable presence on the stage. But
wow, some hate for Ben Affleck coming from Dr. Colin.
Look, I like Ben Affleck as much as the next person, but I would not say that he's Sir Laurence Olivier. He's not an actor. So
he does some good parts,
I guess. Like what? Name one.
I thought he was decent in The Town. I thought he was decent. I thought he was good in Hollywoodland. I thought he did a good job.
I'll give you that. He did show chops in Hollywoodland, but
he was good. I thought he was hilarious in Smokin' Aces.
He was a walking Bostonian accent in The Town. Sorry.
Anyways, speaking of Ben Affleck, let's move on to the next. Which has nothing to do with Ben Affleck, because we just have to get out of this conversation.
I'll bring him in.
Okay. We got another listener voicemail.
And this is in regards to Kevin Smith. So let's listen to what Terry has to say.
Hi, this is Terry, Flory Heaven on Twitter. And I spoke to Kevin Carr about, Mr. Kevin Carr, about seeing Kevin Smith's Red State. I went to the premiere in New York, and I happen to like this film a lot. I think it's Kevin Smith's best-looking picture and also his most grown-up picture. I was surprised, and I was just surprised at the new take, because usually Kevin Smith puts his own work, his jokey, and there wasn't really a lot of that. It was quite serious. I thought the cast was pretty good. Michael Parks was excellent. And it's not a film for everybody, but it was enjoyable. The kills were great, and I'd recommend if anybody wants to check it out, to check it out, because it's different. It's definitely a different Kevin Smith feature. Thanks. Sorry, it's lame. Bye.
That, I will say, is not lame. That was not a lame review.
No, it was very well spoken.
Yeah. So I'm glad that Terry called in.
Me too.
And it's I'm glad that you're on the show too, because if Neil were on the show, it would have been completely pointless, because neither of us had seen it. You've seen Red State.
Indeed, I have.
And would you like to respond to this?
You know, I will say this. I enjoyed watching Red State. It is is not by any stretch of the imagination a great movie. But it's interesting. It is. I agree with the call that to say that it's probably visually the most mature Kevin Smith movie. There's a point in the movie that, you know, it changes genres twice. It starts off very much as these kids looking for sex, high school.
Dick and fart jokes.
Yeah, slasher, slasher sort of horror film. Then it turns very quickly into a drama, strict drama, and then it goes to Waco. You know, that's kind of how it goes down. And I will say this, once it goes to Waco, a lot of it falls apart. Character-wise, not. Like, interesting enough, like, some of the characters are interesting during the Waco part, and the alliances that are formed are ruined, and, you know, there's a lot of guts that a lot of the direction it takes is. But, that being said, Kevin Smith does not know how to shoot action. He just still doesn't, and so what you have is a shootout that's basically a contextless shootout. You know, people shooting guns to the left side of the screen, and then another group shooting to the right, and it doesn't make any sense. So
I thought that was apparent in Cop Out. Just the action just didn't click.
He just, you know, and that's just one of his shortcomings as a director visually, is he does not understand how to put together action. So it's, you know, the rest of the movie is interesting. It's good. You know, if I had to give it a letter grade, it would just teeter along that C+, B-, like middle impossible land.
Sure.
You know, where you grade a movie B-, and people are like, oh, that's pretty good. And then you grade it C+, which is effectively the same thing. And they're just like, ooh, he hated it. But yeah. It's right there in the middle ground there, but, you know, take it for what it's worth. I actually, and this is one of those deals, you know how Kevin Smith said that, like, critics should have to pay for movies and all that, and to be able to have an opinion? Well, I was invited out to Los Angeles by Kevin Smith to go see the movie, so take that with a grain of salt. But also, I paid for the plane ticket, so technically, I ended
up... So you actually paid more than Terry did to see this, because you probably had to pay like a couple hundred bucks.
Exactly. So I flew out there. I was
and parking.
Lucky enough to crash on Todd Gilchrist and Jin Yamato's couch that night. Two other critics that you should read online. Yes. They were very nice. But so I didn't have the hotel pay, but I did have to pay
Jen's
for
been
the,
on the Fat Guy. Jen was on the Fat Guy show last year to talk Twilight.
Oh, there you go. So, but I did pay for the flight and a rental car. So, and time, most of all, I paid for time to be out there. But, of course, Kevin was on two episodes ago of Reject Radio and talked for about an hour and a half about his movie and what he's looking forward to. But as far as just a pure review of it, good, not great, some interesting stuff, some failure. But it's funny to me that I see it so down the middle. And yet the reviews that I've read for it so far are either like A++++ or F. You know?
They're very polarized.
I don't get that at all. I mean, it's so weird to me. But I don't know. But overall, no one will even remember what I'm saying in October when it comes out to general audiences.
I don't think anyone's. I honestly, I'm curious if it's going to have much of an impact in October.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling that the steam, the bubble has, it's on the waning end of the bubble, so, and it's just now playing to the fans, so we'll see. The one thing that does disturb me a little bit about Red State is if you look at Box Office Mojo, it lists it as making $204,000 this weekend for the two shows it had at Radio City Music Hall.
Sure.
And I'm going to call shenanigans on that. Not on Red State. I'm calling it on Box Office Mojo. I'm calling on people who are reporting Box Office. Because this is not Box Office.
Well, what would you call it then?
Well, it's people paying to go see An Evening with Kevin Smith, and then they just tack on the Red State. Yeah, I mean, that's like saying, did you get a movie on your flight to L.A.? Probably not. It's too close.
Yeah.
But it'd be like saying, oh, you know, and take all the Comic-Con people who paid money to go into Comic-Con and say, oh, they spent this much money to see 4 minutes of Tron or something like that. Not really. I mean, it's such a road show that it's not strictly the box office of going to see the movie. I don't know.
But I kind of like that. I kind of disagree with you. You know, I'm not really a purist when it comes to that stuff. But, you know, he really is bringing people in to the show because of the movie, I think. And
see, I think like Harlan Williams, who's a fantastically hilarious comic, could take his movie Rocket Man on the road show and charge premium prices for his comedy act for the hour before the movie starts, and you can suddenly be like, hey, look, Rocket Man made $5 million years after it came out.
You're going to be the only person that thinks that he can do that.
Well, I don't know. Harlan Williams is funny.
He may be funny, but he does not have the following that Kevin Smith has.
Not the following.
Maybe you're right. But, you know, at the end of the day, he is making money specifically for the movie. All of those dollars are going back to his investors. And the dirty secret, if we want to talk about the business side of it.
A good chunk of those dollars are going to pay for Radio City Music Hall rental, too.
Well, the cool thing about that is that, you know, I don't know, at a certain person you start making profit. And yeah, four-walling is tough, but that's the same thing that the studio would have to do. You know, if a studio was releasing this, they would give up 50 to 90% of their, or not 90, they would give up 20 to 50% of the take of a movie to the theater itself. So, you know, that's really what Kevin Smith is just personally doing. And the dirty secret is this. Everyone's talking about, like, is Red State going to make money back? Is it going to be revolutionary about four-walling and bringing it back and all that sort of stuff? Really. The secret is this. They've made their money back. It's a done deal. Like, they spent $4 million on the movie itself. They're spending very little money on the road show. And you know, a lot of what the road show is sort of paying for itself and making money, but they already have a DVD deal that will take care of the investors. That's done.
It's not that expensive of a movie, but if you were to go out and make a $50 million movie, you couldn't do this.
But the that speaks to his point about delivering, and I think it ties back into the Mountains of Madness thing. You know, when we as fans see like a $150 million movie, we see $150 million, but when a studio sees it, they see the other 100 or 150 they're going to spend in advertising, and they see you know, the recoup that they're going to have to make in order to call it a profit.
Yeah, but you can only do this with a small budget movie. Like I said, if Kevin Smith were to make a $150 million movie, sure as hell can't do this. He could not distribute it this way because, you know, 2 million Twitter followers are not. You're not going to recoup that. Second of all, you know, if Brian Johnson makes a sequel to Vulgar, which was a shit movie, released by View Askew, made $5. It's not going to, no one's going to pay to see the Brian Johnson roadshow. They'll see Kevin Smith. I mean, I think it's great that he's able to do this, but it's a unique situation to him and him
alone. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to your question about Kevin Smith making a movie for that much money, I say, so what? He's making a movie for $4 million, and he's making his money back, and he's going to take it on the road and see it, you know?
Oh, good for him. Roger Corman did that in the 60s. That's great. But it only works in this low budget.
Roger Corman didn't just do it in the 60s either, man.
Well, he still does it. It's on Sci-Fi Channel.
Roger Corman did it in the 90s and in the aughts. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think it's interesting from the outside to look in the window and see him do this. And a lot of people like the drama that surrounds him. But, you know, the movie itself, forget about who made it. Forget about any of that. It doesn't look like a Kevin Smith movie at all.
Okay.
An interesting take on horror and where horror can jump to. It is an interesting extrapolation of the zealotry that does absolutely exist in real life in the United States. And we have a very specific example of it that acted as sort of the jumping off point for Parks' character in this. And There's some great acting. There's some great scene chewing. And Melissa Leo, Academy Award winner, Melissa Leo.
She says fuck somewhere in there, doesn't she?
She is great in it. And she says, man, God, I would love to steal this line. But it is a great, great line about that involves beer being in someone and them being in her.
Wow.
And I'm going to leave that because the line itself is just, it jumps out of nowhere and it's a great line. And Melissa Leo is great at everything, so...
I respect her as an actress, but I really don't want to be in Melissa Leo.
Hey, that's your loss.
I don't want to. I'm sorry. No. It's just, front, back, appendix scar. I don't care. I don't want to be inside.
Well, I would take that comment and say, like, in summation, the thing that Red State and this entire situation with distribution and four-walling and going across the country and Melissa Leo's lines, all of this stuff really mirrors one thing in life, and that is Ben Affleck.
Yes, that's right. It works as a bit. There we go. Brought it in. Real quick, one final thing that has nothing to do with Ben Affleck or Red Riding Hood. We've got a quick Fat Guy 5. We're going to burn through this really quick just because we have to do it.
Okay, burn. Let's make it happen.
Let's do it happen. 5 great military sci-fi movies because you've got military sci-fi with Battle Los Angeles. First one, I'm going to throw out Aliens.
Let me ask you this. Why did you choose?
Yes.
You chose Aliens here.
Yeah.
Did Alien not count?
No, it's not. It wasn't military. Well, they were.
Yeah,
to call that a military. They weren't a military. They were a mining ship.
Yeah. I guess that's true.
That would be like I don't know calling. Oh gosh, I can't even think of a good example at this point.
Neither can I. Flight of the Navigator.
There we go. you're still going for that. We put that in the honorable mention.
ET has the government involved as well. But okay, what?
That'd be like calling Jaws
a sci-fi. It military. Is. Sharks are not like that. Well, it's a biologically science fiction movie. Okay, so Aliens. I'm going to give one sentence on all of these so we can make it fast. Aliens is the Godfather 2 of science fiction movies.
Oh, there you go. All right. And the next one is Independence Day, of course, a remake of War of the Worlds, even to the point that a virus kills the aliens. Classic, military sci-fi from the mid-90s, the late 90s.
Late 90s,
1970. I'm sorry, 1997, I believe is when
it's late, mid to late 90s.
Whatever, it's not the 2000s yet. What's your thought? What's your one sentence on Independence Day?
My one sentence on Independence Day is, welcome to Earth.
Earth. Next one, Star Wars, which I guess you could throw in all five or six Star Wars.
Oh, God.
They made six, didn't they? Seven, if you want to count Clone Wars. with the cross-dressing Jabba. Star Wars, military, because, of course, they're
stormtroopers,
rebels.
They're conscripted.
Yeah. I love it. I'm a Star Wars baby. I will forgive almost anything in every Star Wars movie ever. Uh-huh. Sorry. Your sentence.
My sentence is, Star Wars is not the Godfather 2 of science fiction
films. It's the Godfather.
No, it is not.
Boom.
I'm sorry. My one sentence about Star Wars, are we taking it as an... Okay, as one movie, as New Hope, Star Wars is the shittiest dialogue on screen in one of the best movies.
I hate you.
Hi, I'm Luke. I'm here to save you. Thanks, buddy. We got it.
I was 5 when it came out, so there. Next one. Starship Troopers. Did you like Starship Troopers at all?
I love it. I love that movie every moment.
And that has the worst dialogue in it. It's a great movie.
There's a big difference between that tongue-in-cheek, like, terrible dialogue and just earnest, totally believing it's okay and nice to say dialogue. Yeah. Starship Troopers is the 1984/Fahrenheit 451 of science fiction movies.
Interesting side note to Starship Troopers. Mm-hmm. You know, Casper Van Dien follows me on Twitter now.
He has nothing else to do.
Johnny Rico. Well, he's married to like Catherine Oxenberg. She's like a princess, isn't she?
I have no idea who that is. I don't follow the princess scene very much.
She's an actress.
Oh, okay.
Whatever.
Starship Troopers is great.
You get to do the last one, and I'll give my one sentence.
Okay, the last one is one that I chose, and it's near and dear to my heart, so be careful. Stargate.
Yes. I like Stargate. It was good. My one sentence on that is Stargate was a good movie, but the subsequent shows were better, except for Stargate Universe.
That works. My one sentence on Stargate is, it is a fantastic science fiction piece that has the balls to go ancient Egyptian.
All over your tits.
That's right. It goes anyway. Ben Affleck's all over your milk lactating tits.
Wow.
That's it. Put it on the poster.
Honorable mention, we were going to throw in Star Trek just because, of course, it's the new Star Trek movie or any of the, what, 7 or 8 that they made before it.
19 or 20.
Yeah, but you also had Flight of the Navigator you wanted to throw in.
There's no military. Not really. There's just
like, there's police.
I guess. There's like a science. That and like E.T. has this like CIA type entity in it. So they're technically not military necessarily.
It's got Peter Coyote in like a hazmat uniform.
Yeah, which is all you need to see. That's the only reason you should go watch it, is that. Not the, like, heartwarming story or the, like, learning or coming of age or anything or friendship. Go for
it. Or Drew Barrymore as a baby and then you, as a little kid, and then you can go look at her Playboy spread and whack off.
Is there a break coming up?
It is right now. I wanted to bring it all the way down as far as we can go.
Take it to break now. Go.
Now, bye. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. That was probably the longest middle segment I've ever had.
My fault.
That's all Cole Abias' fault for being so cogent and intelligent with his dialogue. And then I had to bring it way down at the end because last thing we need is cogent and intelligent discussion.
We really hit the extremes there. So.
We did. So. It was like a Punky Brewster episode. anyways, right now we've got something else to do. What time is it here?
Well, by my watch, and I don't know what time zone you're in, but I think it's time for the world famous DVD roundup.
That's right, the Indiana Jones whip. No Lucasfilm sound for that.
No.
Just us. Just my mouth. That sounded so dirty.
Well, I love that. It sounds like the Baby Got Back whip to me.
Oh, okay. I don't listen to music.
I don't think so. So anyway, what are we DVDing this week?
Some of the ones I want to point out, Four Lions, which is a great movie from Drafthouse Films. Not a whole lot of people have seen it. It didn't get very big wide release, but it's probably the funniest movie about Muslim extremism that you're ever going to see.
That's true. Since Ishtar.
Since Ishtar. But you liked it too, didn't you?
I love that movie. It made my top 5. It is the funniest movie I saw last year. I can't say enough about it. Everyone needs to go see it. It walks the line. It's brilliant, and it's hilarious and very human.
Definitely worth checking out. Mm-hmm. Also, not nearly as esoteric is Jackass 3D, which, you know what, it's crass, it's stupid, but doggone it if it's not funny.
Yep, documentary filmmaking at its best.
I left. Very similar to Jackass 3D, you have Hannah Montana, the final season.
Why is this on your list?
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. I like Disney. I think Disney Channel has a place, and the place is for kids and tweens.
How old are you? 40-year-old
men.
Are you a kid or a tween?
No, but I've got kids that are. I got 3 kids under 10, so they like the stuff that's on the Disney Channel.
And so you use that as an excuse to enjoy Hannah Montana.
Well, I don't know how you make it sound so crass when you say it that way. It's a cute show. It's the fourth season. It ended. It was kind of nice to, you know, to see it. It's a cute show. I mean, if you're 40 years old and
I can hear you sweating over there. Home,
I always sweat. I just glow.
Well, that's cool. I'm not gonna deride you for what you enjoy because that's a personal decision.
So. Yeah, but that one's out there. It comes in a neat little scrapbooky kind of thing, so for kids to enjoy. It's a nice packaging deal.
Is there another DVD that's exactly like Hannah Montana from AMC?
Yeah, The Walking Dead season 1, which it's not one of my top picks. I will say I'm not a huge fan of The Walking Dead.
Okay,
I thought it was boring, and there's a lot of for it being known as the show with zombies. There's not a whole lot of zombies.
I haven't seen any of the episodes, but I did see the YouTube clip of all of the zombie deaths. So,
well, I mean, when the zombies are there, it's cool. But then it's just a whole bunch of people trying to get along, and they camp together in this giant buffet, which is really kind of stupid. And
I like the symbolism though.
Yeah, but anyway, so there's that. Morning Glory is another one. Did you see Morning Glory?
I didn't, but I will say that it looked really interesting to me. I like those kind of movies that are sort of like broadcast news, but maybe not nearly as heady, you know?
Well, it's Rachel McAdams trying to bring up the ratings at a morning talk show. What's funny is I do a TV appearance every week at a morning talk show, not national.
So yeah, of course, you have sort of an interesting insider opinion of it.
Yeah, and what's funny is I reviewed that and Unstoppable on the same week. And Unstoppable is based on a story. Unstoppable didn't come out this week, but we talked about it. It's based on an actual story that happened in around Cleveland area, so mm-hmm. it was local. All they wanted to talk about was Unstoppable, Morning Glory. It was the worst movie review segment ever because I couldn't review the movies because they're just like, is it like a real talk show? I'm like, well, no, I'm... It was just, yeah, so anyways, but it's a cute movie.
Nice.
What are yours?
My picks, my first pick is Four Lions, and I say it again because I so thoroughly believe in that movie that I want to reiterate it to the audience.
And let me warn you that if you're, make sure you don't invert the O and the I when you're searching it.
Yeah, for Four Lions, the internet. It's a very different movie.
Totally different film.
But you'll come up with
gird or video.
Gird your, your loins for...
Yeah,
I believe. But yeah, Four Lions, I believe in this movie. It is so fantastic, and I believe every adult person should see it. So, okay. And the next two are actually documentaries. The first is Inside Job, which just won the Oscar for Best Doc. And I don't think it matters what your politics are, really. It's just one of those interesting movies that you have to see. It's to become part of the cultural conversation. Inside Job, of course, is about the meltdown economically and how a lot of it came directly from decisions made by people who have now benefited from that meltdown, while the rest of us have not. So it's very interesting, very infuriating.
Including Dr. Kolobias.
Including me. It's not it's not infuriating, it's infuriating. There's an extra R in it, so it's that maddening. But and the second is A Film Unfinished, which I think is a really interesting concept for a documentary. It really is... directed by Yale Hrsonsky, writer-director of this. They found a lot of footage from World War II, from Nazi Germany in the Warsaw ghettos. Mm. And what it shows is very fascinating because it looks, of course, at World War II, which is always informative, but it also casts this interesting light about movie manipulation, how we see history in those images and how those images can be very misleading. So it's very fascinating.
Awesome. Cool. Well, those are the DVDs. The stinkers are any of the number of cheesy Easter videos that are out there right now because
absolutely.
They're not nearly as entertaining as the Christmas videos that were up there a couple months ago. review wrap-up, Battle LA, I said it kind of rocks. Mars Needs Moms, I said kind of right on the cusp there and between kind of rocks and kind of sucks. And Red Riding Hood, I think we both said sucks. You said 10 degrees above suck.
Like right above it, but not much. Yeah.
So. Next week, we got Paul, Limitless, and The Lincoln Lawyer. Don't know who's going to be on the show next week, but Neil should be returning in 2 weeks after South by Southwest. Thank you, Dr. Kolobias, for being on the show.
Hey, had a great time. Thanks a lot.
Cool. And we will catch you guys next week.